welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast. My name is Ben Gross.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a movie podcast / mental health check-in for two broken brain best friends talking around their problems, but not
Never.
About their problems, whilst, you know, laughing at movies.
Yeah.
Before we get to what we're doing, I feel it's far more important we ask the real question. How are you doing, buddy?
I've had a week, man.
You have?
I've had a week. So my chest problem, gone and sort of had it all checked out and this, that, and the other, and gone for a few tests. And the test came back. It's a collapsed lung.
Yes.
That I've been living with for 6 months. I've had a collapsed lung for 6 months.
Snowflake, mate. Absolute liberal beta cuck, soy boy lung.
Anyway, other than that, I'm fine. How are you, babe?
I'm fine. I mean, what am I? I'm mostly just fuming that you would rather collapse a lung than do your half of the work for the podcast.
I've done my half of the work for this episode. I was up until 3 o'clock this morning feeling guilty, struggling to breathe, I might add, because of all the anxiety and adrenaline that was going through me yesterday.
Yeah.
Chatting, like typing away about Ridley Scott and his massive forehead. I don't care about this film. I didn't know what I was doing. I was looking at it. I was like, mate, I might die in a minute. I'm going to go eat a cheesecake. What am I doing?
That's a brilliant way to start an hour-long show about a film. I don't care about this film. Oh, well, I do, Ben.
Yeah, I do. Of course I do.
I think the listeners will as well.
It's a joke. So come on.
I think it's a high time we say,
yes.
What are we doing this week, Ben?
We are cashing in on Ridley Scott's sequel to Gladiator, Gladiator 2, or Gladiator. Either way,
Gladiator,
it's swords, yeah. Sandals, and a beautiful beefcake that... Everywhere, you know what I mean?
Everywhere.
Just slabs
everywhere,
of beef.
Everywhere, everywhere. We've got a lot to get into this week. We've got why Gladiator 2 took so long to sequel and why we're getting one now.
Is it worth the two-decade wait?
How does it compare to the original masterpiece?
What were the other Gladiator movies that we could have had?
And most importantly, has Ridley Scott yet again retroactively ruined another one of his best franchises?
Yes. But now let's paint the picture of where we are, buddy.
Where are we? Where are we, bud? What? I don't know when in time we are.
Right now, buddy.
Right now?
It's 2024.
Oh, God.
Emma Stone and Cillian Murphy both take home Best Actor for Golden Globes.
Ooh.
And they both went full nude for their roles that they won them for.
That's because Cillian Murphy had his Golden Globes out, you see. He painted them that colour as a little subconscious.
Yeah. He dropped his Golden Globe, you know what I mean? I saw it. Get your tits out for the Globes, lads, you know what I mean? It's 2024, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And the UK has been obsessed with pretty colours in the sky that you can only see through a phone screen at 2 a.m. sometimes, somewheres. Swept the nation, babe. The amount of pink sky I saw on Facebook and Instagram the day after the Northern Lights hit Liverpool, unbelievable. Unbelievable. I thought there was a protest going on.
Just let people enjoy things, Ben. Just let people enjoy things.
Enjoy it. Flood my feed. It's 2024, babe.
Yeah.
And it turns out that some lungs aren't built different after all.
No. It turns out some lungs are just built poorly and collapse under the tiniest bit of stress.
Made out of glue and wishes. That sneeze came out of nowhere. That scared the hell out of me. Holy. Yeah.
You thought that was the end.
I thought that was it. You know what I mean?
Like, it's happening now. It's happening now.
Yeah, I felt a bubble. I was like, whoop. Right. The budget of Gladiator 2 is a weird one, man. I can't find an exact number. There's a few sources saying 250, a few sources saying 300, but anywhere between 250 mil and 300 mil, shed loads on this.
That's not true, because I've also seen sources saying up to 350.
See, this is what I'm saying, man. People need to get the facts straight.
My thinking is that it's more money than it's worth. Mm. And there are people who are on the studio side trying to make that point. And then there are filmmakers trying to combat that point. No, it's only like 220 mil.
Yeah.
It's only 220 mil. And then you got the studio going, no, it's over 350.
Right.
And then this is where the sort of war of information between them is happening.
Got you. Well, we normally at this point we do like why are we doing this film? What does it mean to us?
Why is this relevant to us?
Yeah, well, we had to. You know what I mean? We've been forced to. Ridley gave us one of the best sword and sandal movies ever, and then two decades later decided to cash in. So here we are, doing the exact same thing, baby.
Well, I think also this is one of the big cinema events of the year.
Yeah, huge.
I really do. Now, I say that all the big cinema events of this year have been commercial flops.
Massive.
Red One, The Rock's Christmas movie.
Oh, in
that's
the bin.
Opened to 34 mil.
Yeah, in the
Crow
bin.
Opened to none, nothing.
Literally 40 quid.
Joker 2 opened to nothing.
That was about a grand.
Like, this has been the year of massive, massive losses by the studios.
Mad Max Furiosa, mate.
Mad Max.
30 mil on the opening weekend. Awful.
Right. This one, anecdotally at least, seems to have avoided that fate.
This one's doing good, man.
It's doing bits. It's doing bits.
Doing good.
Now, for those of you who have yet to see this film, we are about to break down what happens in it.
Yes.
This is kind of more of a post-mortem if you've come from the cinema.
Yes. This is.
We're going to talk about the thoughts, feelings, and emotions that you probably have, that we definitely have.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not planning on seeing this at all, stick around. But if you are planning on checking out this movie, pause here.
Pause here.
We'll stay here. This is digital media.
Yeah.
We'll be trapped in your phone.
Exactly.
Like little crystal boys.
You pause.
And you can come back to us.
Our timelines, we no longer exist.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
We sat
right.
here actively waiting for you, tapping the wrists, being like, has Derek done it yet? Where's Jane? Is she at the fucking cinema? You know what I mean? This is it now.
Swear jar, Ben.
Ah! It's getting so much more taxing to start screaming. You know what I mean? Like, I need to calm down.
Yeah, I know.
All right,
I know.
Sorry,
so please don't swear, because it adds 9 hours to my editing and it means you might die.
Oh, ukulele, 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 fuck. Ukulele, 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 cut. Ukulele, 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 fuck. Oh, ukulele. That's my swear jar song. You're welcome to use it. Copyright free. Just
right.
If you do use it,
are you telling me now?
No, this is my this is my, because that's going to be insanely popular. I think that's the next TikTok dance.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Should we do a breakdown?
I don't. Let's do a breakdown.
My ear is warm.
We're having a breakdown.
I'm going to start this one.
Oh, you? Oh,
no, right. I'm not. You're going to start this one.
The story centers on Lucius Verus, played by Paul Mescal. The son of Lucilla and the heir to the Roman Empire, now an adult and living in exile. We don't know any of this at the start. They try and bury the lead on who he is, even though in all the promo, they told you who he was.
Yeah, it's good.
They wait halfway through the film to confirm it.
Yep.
His peaceful life is shattered when General Marcus Acacius, played by Pedro Pascal, because of course, every film has to have Pedro Pascal in it now.
You said that sarcastically, but I wholeheartedly agree.
Anyway, Pedro invades his home, kills his wife, and captures Lucius, enslaving him and forcing him back to Rome. Rome is now under the rule of the tyrannical emperors Caracalla and Gator.
Yeah.
Gator!
Gator!
And gladiatorial games dominate the city. I mean, you'd hope so. Lucius becomes a gladiator in the Colosseum. I mean, you'd hope so.
Sure.
Where he rises through the ranks, because we need a film.
Yeah.
Channeling the spirit of his childhood hero, Maximus, and also every beat of the original film.
Mm-hmm.
Lucilla recognizes Lucius, but struggles to reconnect with him due to his resentment over their past of her abandoning him and sending him off to exile.
Yeah. She did very little to bring him back, you know what I mean? Lucilla and Acacius conspire with senators to overthrow the emperors and restore the Roman Republic. Meanwhile, Lucius bonds with fellow gladiators and learns more about his heritage, discovering relics of Maximus that inspire him.
Oh, what a champ.
However, the conspiracy is exposed by the scheming Macrinus, played by Denzel Washington, absolute hero, a former slave turned power-hungry advisor. Betrayals lead to public trials and more violence in the Colosseum, with Lucius forced to face Acacius in combat, defying expectations, of whom we're not sure.
And the entire plot of the film.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't care about this anymore.
See?
Let's go for a pint.
See what I mean? Defying expectations of all plot points so far and the entire gasping audience. Lucius spares his opponent's life, sparking riots as the populace grows disillusioned with the emperor's tyranny.
Chaos engulfs Rome as the conspirators, including Lucilla, are captured. Macrinus, Denzel Washington, manipulates events to stage a deadly showdown in the Colosseum, pitting Lucius against overwhelming odds. Armed with Maximus's sword and armor, Lucius rallies the gladiators to revolt, leading to a bloody uprising. If you say that in a northern accent, it's better.
Led to a bloody uprising.
Lucilla sacrifices herself during the rebellion, and Lucius discovers she had hidden his true heritage. He is Maximus's biological son.
Yeah. Because that was talked about loads in the first film.
Wasn't it just? Wasn't the man of honor, Maximus Decimus Meridius, made so much better by the fact that he had a second child that he knew about, but just didn't care about?
Illegitimate.
Because he had a dead one he wanted to get back to.
That's it.
After a climactic duel with Macrinus, Lucius defeats him and declares himself the rightful leader, offering Rome a chance at renewal in the worthiest speech I've yet to see on cinema. The film concludes with Lucius mourning his losses but embracing his role as a symbol of hope for a new Rome.
Ta-da! In summation, Gladiator 1, done worse.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Well, we'll get into it. We have to get into it. What's Ridley been doing since Gladiator? Because it seems to me like he's just been going through the back catalogue and going, haven't ruined that yet.
So, Ridley baffles me as a filmmaker. So, researching this, it kind of caught me how prolific a filmmaker he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
With that much practice, I had assumed that there would be way more hits than misses.
You see, I've got a point here. I think I've seen it happen creatively with musicians.
Sure.
And I always use George Lucas as the example.
Okay.
On your way up, everyone around you is flagging your bad ideas.
Right.
So George Lucas making Star Wars had Lawrence Kasdan. He had Spielberg.
Right.
He had people around him just going, George, this is twaddle.
Yes.
And he listened to that feedback and he took it on the chin because he's a professional and he goes, great, okay, I can work on this. That's bad. I'll cut that. I'll change this. It comes out. It defines a genre. It changes the epoch. It moves filmmaking forward. So he comes to make the prequels and he goes, I'm thinking about these like aliens that have got slanty eyes and they speak with an Asian accent and they're like shocked all the time and they're in charge of trade and no one's comfortable telling George Lucas, inventor of Star Wars, that that's twaddle.
Yes I see what you're saying here.
Oh, I'm gonna have like a sort of Jamaican accented clown frogman.
That's a stereotype.
Yeah, no, that came out.
I forgot how good you are at that.
It's the only accent I'm good at, and it's fucking infuriating that exists in me.
You know what I mean? It's brilliant. You lose that filter because the people around you become sycophants. And I saw it so often in music where no one feels comfortable going, you pay my mortgage because I am your employee, and I have to tell you that this is toss.
Right.
Ridley makes loads of films now.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone on a Ridley Scott shoot who'd be comfortable going, hello, Ridley Scott, director of Alien and Blade Runner and Gladiator. Have you considered that this is awful?
Yeah. Hire me. I would gladly do this every step of the way. Right, we're just going to have him running up here like an excited school child with some new crayons in his pocket. No, let's not.
Right.
Scrap it.
Right, what if the first act is a beat-for-beat remix of the first one, but with less convincing effects, less convincing characters, no dialogue to give you any backstory as to why you should care.
And loads of black and white flashbacks.
Right, the first act of this film is like a house remix of an Al Green song.
Kinda, yeah.
Like a really good song that you love, and someone's just going... under, going, it's better now, isn't it? And you're like...
No.
It is more modern. It is more modern. Is. I will give you that. But I don't want this. I don't need this. Get this away from me. No.
Okay. Well, I see what you're saying. In my travels through the Ridley Scott annals.
Yeah, that's a word. Well done. Nice.
I had to pronounce it correctly because it made me giggle.
You did.
17 films since Gladiator, buddy.
Yes.
17. And I went through them. And I was like, okay, that's pretty good. You know, there's a few bangers in there. You've got Black Hawk Down from 2001. That's great, like film. A year after Gladiator. You've got American Gangster from 2007. That's a great film.
Good film. Long film, but good film.
Long film. You've got The Martian from 2015.
Very good film.
Absolute toss in between all of those. And the one thing that I've come to the conclusion of, and people have said this to me in the past. I believe Amber from Control Alt Critique said this to me a little while ago. Ridley Scott is a great filmmaker, but he is a terrible script picker. Like, he just picks the worst scripts. Bless his cock and balls, right? This is what I think he does. He reads a story and goes, I find that really interesting because I'm a nerd.
Yes.
And then forgets that 88% of the population loved Fast and Furious.
Right. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's 100%. Like, you have to find the balance between this, buddy. Like Napoleon, very interesting character. 3-hour Napoleon drama. Do we need to ruin France?
I disagree with you, though, because I think... Well, I partially disagree with you.
Okay.
You said he's terrible at picking scripts. That's without question.
Yeah, yeah.
The Napoleon endurance test that he put out last year, or whenever it was, he went so niche on that. He'd been looking to make a Napoleon film for years.
Yeah.
He somehow managed to include all the bits that the general public wouldn't be interested in whilst getting vast amounts of the historical information deliberately wrong to make it more relatable to a general audience who already didn't care. Right?
See what I mean?
So he's scripts are awful, but where I disagree with you is I don't think there's a single shot in the last 15 years of Ridley Scott's filmmaking that I've looked at and gone, wow.
Okay.
We're doing David Fincher series at the moment.
Yeah.
There isn't a single shot in a David Fincher film that I can't pause and go, that's a lovely thing to look at.
Okay, I'm on the other side of that fence,
A lot of Ridley Scott shots are proper workmanlike.
I get what you're saying.
There's two people in a frame.
What you're saying. There are a few shots, though, that are gorgeous, and I will stand by.
Are they done with the camera, or are they CGI shots?
They're done with camera.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's mainly his set designer who I'm obsessed with. Like in this film especially,
right, okay.
There is some gorgeous, gorgeous backdrops.
So that's Arthur Max, who is the production designer. And we actually covered another one of his films recently, believe it or not, because Arthur Max came straight off Gladiator 1 and he did Panic Room.
Okay.
So he's the guy that built the Panic Room house.
Right. That's awesome.
Right.
You see what I mean? Like, and then so Gladiator 1, Gladiator 2, The Martian is drop dead gorgeous. It was filmed in Jordan.
Yes.
There was a lot of on location filming in Jordan. Jordan's a beautiful country.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like stunning. There are so many shots in that film that I would have as A3 posters on my wall.
Maybe.
Just because they're gorgeous.
Maybe. I think again, praise the sets, praise the locations, but he's not doing anything with the camera. I'm like, oh, that's a Ridley Scott.
Yeah, okay. No, I get what you're saying. I wouldn't be able to pull a Ridley Scott shot out of a pile of shots in front of me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas Fincher, I would 1,000% go, oh, that's piss blue. That's obviously Fincher.
There's a lot in this film that I really, really don't like.
I know. And it's upset me because you loved Gladiator 1. Like,
it's my favorite popcorn blockbuster.
Yeah, you loved it. So what's the difference between Gladiator 1 and Gladiator 2 for you?
I'm going to, in an attempt to not be my normal curmudgeonly moaning grumpy self.
Okay.
Rather than tell the dear listeners everything that I hated about this film.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about the things that were in Gladiator 1 that I wanted to see the sequel to.
Awesome.
Right.
I'm in for this.
What I love most about Gladiator 1 is not the action or the set pieces, but the story and characters. We talked about this in our episode the other week.
We did, yeah.
The first film had so much soul and depth that makes you care about the action happening on screen.
Yeah.
You cared about Maximus getting his revenge, not because it was cool or Fast and the Furious Part 19, but because it was important for his character.
Yeah, it was just. It was a justified... Right. From his perspective,
like,
vengeance
was vengeance for his family was not just selfish. It's because when he saw them again in a minute, when he dies, because he knows he's going to see them in the afterlife, he wants to be able to stand in front of them and be able to tell them that he made it right before coming along.
1,000%.
Right?
It was incredible.
I'm going to see my wife in a minute and I want to be able to tell her, don't worry, I sorted it.
Yeah.
Right?
I avenged you.
Conversely, Commodus doesn't just kill Maximus.
No.
Which is always an option in Gladiator 1. He could do it at any point. He's the Emperor of Rome.
Yeah.
And Maximus is a slave.
Yeah.
But Commodus doesn't because he wants something deeper. He wants to win the ideological battle and he wants Maximus to die knowing that Commodus was right.
Yes.
That Commodus was a strong, valid man worthy of respect. And killing Maximus was secondary to proving Maximus wrong.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Right.
It made him one of the greatest villains.
All of that beautiful depth then meant when the action happened, I was super invested. I was super, super invested. Now, the first third of this film remixes all of those action beats,
yep,
all of those plot beats from we start with a big battle,
yep,
the protagonist's family or wife is mm-hmm. killed, and yep, he is sold into slavery. He then appears in a vaguely Middle Eastern small gladiatorial arena, yep, and meets his new owner.
Yeah.
All of which is a direct lift from Gladiator 1.
Yep.
But has none of the backstory.
Nope.
And so you're just watching this weird sort of requel.
Yeah.
That has none of the relatability of the original. And then about halfway through makes all of the stuff that you've seen so far no longer relevant to the story going forward.
Yeah, it's completely null and void.
Right. He nulls and voids it by he gets to meet what has up till now been painted as the primary antagonist.
Yeah.
They sort it out, and then that primary antagonist dies, and yep, then Macrinus, who's the Oliver Reed equivalent, is yeah, not presented as the antagonist, it's the Emperor's. So now you're supposed to hate the Emperor's, but yep, then in the last act, it becomes Macrinus. So the villain keeps switching out.
Yeah.
And our primary hero has gone from wanting to avenge his wife to wanting to reconnect with his mother to wanting to save the world.
Yeah, it's a choose-your-own-adventure that Mescal went on and
right,
won every time with incredible ease and with no real danger to it because everyone likes him.
Right.
Everyone is on his side.
Yes.
He can rally an entire army for no other reason other than the fact that he's Mescal.
Right.
Like, that's it.
And the times in which it apes the first one is worse because the first fight in Gladiator is he's fighting other gladiators.
Yeah.
And it's visceral and it's practical and it's dirty.
That's it.
In this one,
bring it home.
He chokes a bald monkey that's CGI. It's yeah, a hairless monkey that he bites and then chokes out. So it's just Paul Mescal choking his monkey in front of a crowd.
Nailed
the
it.
The first battle, rather than being a real forest with a thousand extras,
yep,
all just getting down in the mud while the trees burn, all done practically, it's a sort of bizarre, ropey CGI Age of Empires
yeah,
battle scene with the... Like, honestly, if you've played a Mario game,
yeah,
you've seen better CGI water.
Dude, the water's awful.
Play Zelda Wind Waker, you'll be more convinced.
Dude, play anything that's like Sega Game Gear up and it's better water. Do you know what I mean? Like Game Gear Plus
right,
is better water. But I'll agree with you wholeheartedly. It's
very confused and I don't know who this is for because it's bringing back enough of the first film mm-hmm, that it feels like you don't need to watch the first film because it's giving you all of that.
Right.
So it's like, if you're a new watcher, here's the first one done again.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do that, don't tie it to the first one plot-wise because it has to crowbar so much in.
I know, mate.
That isn't relevant to someone who doesn't like Gladiator 1.
So this is my thought process, right? I feel like when way back in 2000 and we were presented with Gladiator, we had this gorgeous film,
yep,
full of depth, full of soul,
yeah,
full of heart. It had great characters. It had great antagonists. It had great action. It had everything that you needed from a film and it lived with us forever, right?
Yeah.
Now in 2024, when you talk to the new generation about Gladiator, they're like, I don't care about this weird sword and sandal movie that came out
right,
24 years ago.
That I always see in the charity shop on DVD.
Exactly. It's 99p in every yeah, single yeah, charity shop. I don't right, care.
Yeah.
And I think what they've done is they've tried to recreate the magic of the first one for the new generation. But
yes,
we're living in a different time, right? We're living in a time now where it's instant information.
Mm-hmm.
It's instant gratification. There's no patience. There's no slow build. It's you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the story. You're out.
Yes.
Right. And Ridley's almost tried to capitalize on this. I don't think Ridley's built for it. If I'm honest with you, I don't think he does. He doesn't right, do straight in, straight out movies. He needs the slow build and he needs to sort of lean into it rather than fight it. It's odd.
This movie's like if your granddad made an app.
It's that. And I'm kind of weirdly jealous in some ways because there's a lot of the younger generation are enjoying it. And I love that. Like, that's awesome that you're enjoying this film. And if you're one of the people that love this film, I'm so incredibly jealous.
Right.
But also, it's incredible that you get what we had in 2000.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It might not be for our tasting because we had Gladiator. Like, this isn't for us. It's not for Gladiator fans.
Everyone that's asked me, I've looked at them and the sort of under 25s, I've been like, mm-hmm. you should go. You probably love it.
Exactly.
The over 30s, I'm like, nah, 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 nah. Not for us. Not for us. Yeah. It's just not made for us. And I think we're going to have to start. We're going to have to start recognizing that a lot of cinema is made for a demographic that we no longer belong to.
We've outgrown it, mate. We're sort of fossils in the cinematic audience now. You know what I mean?
And if you're listening to this show, you probably are too.
1,000%. Because I've seen our demographics, mate. And
right.
You know what I mean? I see you, buddies. Yeah. I see you. I see you 29 to 35-year-old buddies. All right?
So he's... Okay, he's tried to update it, clearly.
Yeah. And he's done it for a new generation and it's nice and it's lovely. It's not for us. I get that. This film wasn't anywhere near as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Right.
And I actually, whilst I was watching it, I had some fun.
Right.
The monkey thing, hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Sharks in the Colosseum, hilarious. You know what I mean? Like the dumb stuff that was
sharks
in there.
Sharks in the Colosseum, I've literally in my notes got written Deep Blue Caesar.
Oh, that hurt my chest, but that was so worth it. That's amazing.
Do you have any idea how much of a life goal it would be that I tell a joke so funny that you die?
It's just, dude, if you do it, that's the just do the B-movie solo. Do you know what I mean? Just do the next episode is B-movie solo and it's I was accidentally so funny that I killed a man. You know what I mean?
That would be brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it would have to be accidental as well. I don't have it in me to do it intentionally.
You'd have to do a stand-up tour called Rest in Peace. You know what I mean? Like, the whole thing was wicked. I had great fun with it because I went in with such bad expectations. I was like, I'm going to be so angry.
Right.
And then I started enjoying it. The first bit, I was like, this is so thin. The story's really thin. Mm-hmm. It's a terror. I don't care about his wife. She said four words the entire film. Now she's dead. I don't care. The only things that I've seen her get assaulted through a laundry line. That's it. That's her character arc for me. Also, uh-huh. she can fire bow and arrow. Mint.
Yeah.
And then it got a bit twisty turny with the twin emperors. I liked that aspect. I liked that it was two evils, sort of which one was lesser evil. They were trying to sort of. It was like a yang and yang. There was no yin.
No,
you know what I mean?
It was a piss poor deconstruction of Joaquin Phoenix's two modes in the first one.
Yeah, it was.
What if instead of having it in one person, we just had two blokes and one of them's a bit mental and one of them's a little bit sensitive?
I'm a massive Joseph Quinn fanboy though. So he was fun to watch. He nailed his character. He's a great actor. I think he did it well. And then whenever Denzel Washington came onto the stage, I was like, oh, this is the film. This is where the film's been hiding. The entire 3 hours that I've been sat here, the film has been tucked away in Denzel Washington's pocket because that's the most interesting part.
When he's on screen, the film works.
It's incredible.
But his excellence makes everything worse by comparison.
It really does. It's a great casting, but a simultaneously terrible casting because he's so good.
Right.
The rest of the film is piss weak.
I would say he comes across as actually balls to the wall, gripping hip, homosexual.
Yeah.
Whereas everything else comes across as cheap camp.
Yes. Yeah.
I look at him and I go, he might actually make love to me and change my orientation.
1,000%.
The rest of the film is a football fan in a dress.
Yes.
On October 30th.
On a stag do in Berlin. Duct tape to a lamppost.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. No, you're right.
And I kind of, I just don't get why Ridley did this now. Besides the money.
I've got some answers for you, bud, because I found some stuff that Ridley said about why Gladiator 2 took so long to make. So I've selected two quotes.
Right.
One is from 2023. When he's sort of like, he's, you know, it's wrapping up. He's actively like, I'm very excited about this. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
And then I have one from 2024 and you will see the stark difference in his attitude towards Gladiator 2, buddy.
Right.
So in 2023, when Ridley Scott was asked, why now? Why Gladiator 2 in 2024? In 2023, Ridley Scott says, why now? Well, it didn't have a script before. We tried, actually, 4 years ago, and I chose a very good writer who couldn't get his head around it. He wrestled with it. He was terribly upset that he didn't deliver. He's a friend of mine. I said, oh, you're not getting there? And he said, no. That took 10 months. So it went dead. And then we circled the wagons again, coming back with a very obvious idea. And why not? There is a survivor. The survivor is the son of the union between Lucilla and Maximus.
Ugh.
You can tell that he's excited about it, right?
Yeah,
he's hyping it up. He's like, dude, this is it. This is why it took so long.
I finally cracked this nut.
This is it. We found the story that needs to be told. This is how we continue the saga.
Yes.
He's excited about it. Ridley Scott in 2024 was asked, why did it take 24 years to remake to sequel Gladiator?
Hit me.
Frankly, mate, we're all busy. So honestly, no one really cared. That's the end of quote. He's as deflated as my left lung about this film, right? He's just sort of like, nah, I'm done.
I'm done. My God.
Yeah. He's like, well, it is what it is. It's going out. Enjoy it. Why did it take this long? Busy.
I feel like I watched an interview with Mike Tyson this week because for those of you listening in the future, he's just done his boxing fight with a YouTuber.
Oh, yeah.
But he was interviewed by a 12-year-old.
Okay.
And the 12-year-old said, when you retire, what do you want to be your legacy? And he looked this child in the face and he went, legacy is bullshit. It's a made-up word. It's a made-up word that people have latched onto and it doesn't mean anything because after all of this, I'll be dead. We'll all be dead. We'll be dust. You'll die. You'll be dust too. And nothing will matter.
I love Mike Tyson's current arc. His ruin a childhood winter, I'm into it.
I feel like we need to sit Ridley Scott down with Mike Tyson.
Yes.
And have Mike Tyson just explain. You don't have to make films, Ridley.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to release films.
Yeah.
You can make it go, ooh, actually, and then just decide to not bring it out.
Yeah.
I mean, he did do that a little bit, right? So we're gonna go into a mirror dimension right now, Ben.
Ooh, okay.
Because not long after Gladiator 1, Russell Crowe kind of felt that there was room for a sequel. You know,
okay.
It was a big breakout hit for him.
Yeah,
so he approached his mate, Nick Cave.
Right.
Musician and screenwriter. He wrote quite a few scripts that are actually really good. Really good.
Yeah.
Great script writer. He writes long scripts, but he's an incredible songwriter, one of my favorite musicians. And Russell Crowe's like, do you want to give this a crack? And he did.
Okay.
And it got leaked a couple of years back.
So what we're going
to do now is we're going to slip inside the Twilight Zone.
Yes.
And I've written a second breakdown. I say written. I've ripped off a second breakdown.
Amazing. Oh my God, you have. I can see it.
Do you want to kick us off with...
Yes, please, mate.
You do the first part and I'll do the second part.
All right, I got you. Cave's Gladiator 2 screenplay opens with Maximus waking up in the afterlife. To his disappointment, it isn't the sun-kissed Elysium that he dreamt of in Gladiator, but an endless, rain-sodden netherworld where wretched refugees huddle on the shores of a black ocean. With the help of a ghostly guide, Maximus treks to a ruined temple where he meets Jupiter, Mars, and five other diseased and decrepit Roman deities. Jupiter explains that... Oh my God. Jupiter explains that one of their number,
Hephaestus, yep,
has betrayed them and is now preaching the gospel of another god, bastard, who is more powerful than all of them.
Jupiter offers him a deal. Remember, this is Maximus from Gladiator. Jupiter offers him a deal. If he kills Hephaestus, then he will be reunited with his wife and son in the golden wheat fields of Elysium.
Right.
No sooner has Maximus tracked down Hephaestus than he's zapped out of the gloom and into the world of flesh and blood a decade or two after his death.
What?
Human again, he travels to Rome in search of his son Marius. Oh yeah, Marius, right, who was crucified and burned to death in Gladiator, is alive and kicking in Gladiator 2.
Fantastic. I'm on board.
At this stage, the script focuses on a band of early Christians dodging the Roman authorities.
Right.
But these scenes also bring back some of the characters and political intrigue from Gladiator.
Right.
As well as meeting his now adult son, he bumps into Juba, who's played by Jimon Hounsou.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And the screenplay's villain is none other than Commodus's nephew, Lucius, now grown up to be as evil as his uncle.
That's incredible.
Now,
okay.
Are you ready for how this film ends?
No.
Ben, I want you, I'm so happy that you're reading this third paragraph. Go for it, bud.
All right, I'm in it. You ready?
Yeah.
Everything leads to a showdown between Lucius's Roman enforcers and the Christian resistance army, which Maximus and Juba have been training in secret.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what? Another chat with the Roman gods? A family reunion in sunny Elysium? Well, no. Instead... fuck off. Instead, Cave has Maximus striding into battle through the centuries,
yeah,
in crusades, in the world wars, in Vietnam, and finally the Pentagon,
yep,
in a grander version of the opening montage of X-Men Origins Wolverine. The message is that by choosing armed combat over non-violent resistance, Maximus has condemned humanity to an eternal cycle of bloodshed, which is a thought-provoking conclusion, but maybe not a crowd-pleasing one.
Right.
Buddy,
right.
I want this film right. so badly.
So the title of the screenplay was Gladiator 2 - Christ Killer.
Yes! God, I want this.
It was the Roman gods hiring Maximus to put down this newfangled religion.
Dude.
And him turning against him and going, no, actually.
Jesus Christ.
This is mint.
Would be played by Danny Trejo with a machete. Like, that's the only way that this would play out.
Right.
Hola, I'm Jesus Christ. And then he just takes out an entire army with his Christ sword. Do you know what I mean? That's dude, I want this so bad. It's the right. best. It's the best worst B-movie plot I've ever heard in my entire life. And it's Gladiator 2.
I got two quotes for you.
Hit me up.
Russell Crowe,
yeah,
on reading the script that he'd commissioned Nick Cave to write.
Yeah.
His quote, don't like it, mate.
Oh, okay, yeah, sounds.
Just
all
simple,
right.
Just don't like it, mate. Nick Cave, however, he said, I enjoyed writing it very much because I knew on every level of my being that it was never going to get made. Let's call it a popcorn dropper.
Do you know what I love about this?
Right.
I found an interview with Russell Crowe and it was like, well, my idea for Gladiator 2 was Maximus. He's killed too many people to go to heaven, but he's too good of a person to go to hell. So the second film is Maximus in limbo and he's fighting his way back to his family and he makes some deals with some gods and he does X, Y, and Z and it all makes sense and it's all plausible. It's all justifiable. And he ends up back in the human world with his newly revived wife and son. And it's like,
right,
buddy, that's just as bad as the insane Pentagon man running script that you've just read me. Do you know what I mean? It's mental. I think Russell Crowe saw this film as sort of like the sci-fi, the sci-fi springboard that he really needed to get going.
Well, so related to that is when Nick Cave was given the job of writing the sequel, he said to Russell Crowe, I thought you died at the end of the first one. And Russell Crowe's response was, yeah, but you're the writer, so that's a you problem.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That is true. That is true. It's a writer's problem, that is.
Figure it out. That's on you. That's what I'm paying you to do.
What else is your job?
Right.
Make it work, buddy. So with this film, we've gone into a lot of stuff as to sort of like why we don't like it, why it doesn't compare as well to the first one. There's a few bits that I do love that are great.
Yes.
There's some bits that had me howling. I can never get over Mescal running up the stairs. That was a ridiculous
thing. Excited terrier.
Legitimately, a kid with crayons in his pocket and his mama just dropped a new notepad on the kitchen counter. He ran up them stairs like no man's business. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. It's like, buddy, you're a gladiator. You could die in 30 seconds. This is how you want to enter the arena where thousands of people are cheering your name. Amazing. It's amazing. I want the confidence to do that run.
Yes.
In real life. You know what I mean?
100%.
Anywhere. There's tons of this stuff. But you said you had a conjecture corner as to what happened and why you think it went this way. I'm desperate to hear that.
I do.
So I've got a couple questions for you, and I know the answer because we've been speaking about it, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. in your opinion, do you feel that this film delivered in what it promised? Objectively, not subjectively to you and I, but objectively as a film.
In that it is a film set in the same universe as the first Gladiator that mm-hmm. continues a plot set after the events of the first one.
Right.
Yes, it is a sequel to Gladiator.
Okay.
In that it provides similar, nigh on identical story beats and action set pieces. Yes, it is a sequel to Gladiator.
Okay.
It's not a sequel to the parts of Gladiator I care about.
Okay, that's right? Fair. That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
If you kind of like Gladiator, if you think it's an all right film, mm-hmm. this is a perfectly fine sequel.
Agreed.
If you really like the depth and complexity of Gladiator 1, this film is not for you.
It is not.
What about you?
I think it did deliver. I think it delivered what it promised. It promised a sword and sandal epic film that's a bit of an endurance test, and it has twists mm-hmm. and turns. It's just that the twists and turns were a bit thin on the ground for me. Right. You know what I mean? Right. And I'm into B movies.
And not supported by the characterization.
No, I don't.
At all.
Not at all. I feel like the films that I'm into, B movies, cheap independent mm-hmm. movies. I mean, yesterday I convinced my friends to watch Manborg, which is a Stephen Kostansky film he made uh-huh. it was less than a grand. I think it was 560 wow. quid he made the film on.
Okay.
And it has more character development and plot armor than anything that I saw in Gladiator 2. That sounds mean.
Right.
Because
yeah.
it's a $350 million movie. I enjoyed a lot of it. Fun stuff. Mm-hmm. Would I do it again? Absolutely not, because my expectations are like normal now. They're not in the ground.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd enjoy it as much as a second time, a second watch through. But, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. Would you like to know how much this has made in its opening weekend?
Yeah, so as of recording, it's currently Friday the 22nd. This has been out for one full week.
It has.
So what's the current takings? Okay. For its first week.
Currently it's at 98.9 million. So it's a bee's dick away from 100 mil.
Right, okay. In its first week.
That's not that bad.
That's not that bad at all, especially considering that there will be numbers that it's earned this yeah. week that aren't part of that accounting yet, because
exactly.
cinemas are slow to post numbers and all this kind
exactly.
of stuff.
Exactly. So it's doing great. It's doing bits. I hope it's successful. I hope people get what we got from Gladiator 1 yeah. from this one. And
again, like I say, if you thought Gladiator 1 was fine, mm-hmm. you will enjoy this sequel just yeah. as much.
It's no more, no less.
In the same way that, like, if you thought Ghostbusters were fine, you will think Ghostbusters Afterlife is equally fine. If you love sure. Ghostbusters, you mm-hmm. will adore Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yeah.
This is the inverse of that.
Yeah, okay. I see.
This is the sequel for people who aren't fans of the first film, which is a mind-boggling thing to make.
Right. Would you like to play a game?
I'd love to play a game. I've got no idea what this is.
Okay, so I, in my omnipotent wisdom, have found Ooh. A Ridley Scott quiz. Have I done it? No. Am I prepared right. to do it along with you? Heck yes.
Is it 25 questions that I'll have to edit down to 4 for time?
I think it's 6 questions.
Thank God for that.
It's hitting me in the... It's giving me ants under my skin that it's 6. Just round it out. Go 10. Go 5.
Because the number of BuzzFeed quizzes that you've brought to the show, and you're like, it's 24 questions.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
like...
Yeah. Ah. And at the end of it, you find out that you're the same Disney princess.
Right.
Are you ready for this one?
I am.
This is called How Well Do You Know Your Ridley Scott Films? Question one. Oh, fuck off. This one's a hard one straight off the bat.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, God, general of the Felix Legions, loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius, father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or in the next.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
In which iconic Ridley Scott film did this line feature in? Is it A, Kingdom of Heaven? Is it B,
choice.
Gladiator? Or is it C, Robin Hood?
I'm going to say Gladiator.
You have said Gladiator. I'm going to lock that one in. We sure with that?
No, but I'm going to go with it. I'm going to trust my gut.
All right, mate. This is another hard one. Prepare yourself. Mm-hmm. Frank Lucas was an American drug trafficker who operated in Harlem during the late 1960s to early 1970s.
Give me the multiple choices.
He was known for cutting out middlemen in the drug trade and buying heroin directly from its source in the Golden Triangle of Southeast Asia. He was convicted of drug trafficking in 1976 and later became an informant. Which Ridley Scott film is based on the life of Frank Lucas?
American Gangster.
Well, that's not one of the multiple choice, I'm afraid, buddy.
Yes, it is. Yes,
it's Body of Lies, American Gangster, or The Counselor.
Right, so I'll go with American Gangster.
I think I would do that one as well, buddy.
Right, okay, yeah.
In Greek mythology, blank is a Titan god of fire. Blank is credited with the creation of humanity from clay and of defying the gods by stealing fire and giving it to humanity as civilization. Which Ridley Scott's films is named after the Greek god? Is it A, Prometheus? Is it B, Hannibal? Or is it C, Exodus, Gods and Kings?
Oh my God, can you imagine if it was C? And there were people in their classics degree going,
yeah.
The interesting thing about the way that Zeus punished Exodus, Gods and Kings was he tied him to a rock where a hawk could eat out his liver every day.
That's it.
No, it was Prometheus. He also wasn't a Titan, but that's fine.
It's fine. Let's just breeze on. Wadi Rum, also known as the Valley of the Moon, is a valley cut into the sandstone and granite rock in southern Jordan. I've spoken about this already. I've ruined it.
Mm-hmm.
Which among the following Ridley Scott films used the location for shooting various external scenes? Was it A, Kingdom of Heaven? Was it B, The Martian? Or was it C, Blade Runner?
I'm going to go with, do you know what? I was listening to this great podcast earlier.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it was The Martian.
Oh, they sound smart and hung.
Right.
Which actor appeared in the role of JD, a cowboy hitchhiker in the 1991 Ridley Scott film, Thelma and Louise? Is it A, Robert Downey Jr., B, Leonardo DiCaprio, or C, Brad Pitt?
Oh, it is, I'm going to say, Brad Pitt.
You scored 100% of the Ridley Scott quiz. The hardest Ridley Scott quiz known to man.
This is why we have got a podcast, you know? It's just deep knowledge. Now,
we just know movies, you know what I mean?
We've got in the notes here that we're going to get into the rating, but before we do, I'm going to do something that I know we're definitely going to cut, right? Which is this week's comment corner. Because I was going to say, let's go through some of the comments on the Patreon.
Yep.
But I've got a different comment that I want to discuss.
Okay.
And it's going to be like a little mini game. You ready for this?
Yeah, let's do it.
We posted on Instagram earlier a little mini review of the film They Cloned Tyrone, which I watched recently and I adored, right?
I've still not seen it.
Ross Grant said, I feel that every film is missing Jamie Foxx as a pimp, to be honest.
Ooh, yes.
Now, I then replied, so obviously what film would be most enhanced with Jamie Foxx as a pimp? Now, I've had a go.
Yeah.
I've said The Zone of Interest.
Oh, mate, I went the exact same thing. My first thought was Schindler's List.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But then Ross has come back with, clearly it's 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, that would be a good one. That's a good one. What about The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas?
Oh, God.
But instead of The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, it's just Jamie Foxx as a pimp in striped pyjamas.
I was thinking maybe Sophie's Choice.
Oh, he has to choose between Sophie or Sophie. Which one gon' get that dick?
I wasn't going to go there. No, I was going to go exact same film that's just Jamie Foxx is a pimp and has the chat with her about which child is.
Okay, sound. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I thought it'd be interesting to invite the listeners to jump on board. I want to know what film would be most enhanced by Jamie Foxx playing a pimp in the film. We've covered the obvious bases now. Yeah. Now it's time Jurassic to get Park. Creative.
Jurassic Park, he's in one of the enclosures. Just pimp slapping Richard Attenborough as he goes past.
Jurassic Park as one of the people in the Jeeps, and he's just assessing every dinosaur. for its worth on the sexual market.
Yes.
How many people want to fuck
is a triceratops? Yeah. Oh my God, bud, we went to the same place. I love you.
I love you too.
Okay. Yeah, I'm down for this. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Just give us the film. Give us what you think he'd be doing. It's on the. It's on Instagram. It's a mini review of They Clone Tyrone. Get involved. I want chaos.
What are you rating Gladiator 2?
So this is an interesting one because it's the first film in a, like, I went to go see The Crow remake, and it was everything I expected it to be.
Shite.
Yeah, it was pure shite. But I was kind of cued into, like, it's pure shite. And, like, I love the original Crow, but a remake is so far removed. It doesn't worsen or affect the prior work. Do you know what I mean? Like, could be as many remakes of The Crow as you like, but the 1994 Alex Proyas one is just what it is, right?
Yeah.
Gladiator 2, I was struggling to, like, laugh quietly at quite a lot of the very serious dramatic moments in this film.
Yeah.
There's a bit at the end where Paul Mescal walks back into the Colosseum at the very end, and it's playing the Lisa Gerrard. No Sharon, no Sharadi. Right, and he reaches down, and I'm like, if this motherfucker pulls out two clay figurines, I'm gonna lose my mind.
Dude, I had the same thought. I was like, don't you dare,
Right. But I was openly laughing, like the choking the bald CGI monkey.
Amazing.
The ridiculous performances by, I know you love him, but Joseph Quinn is done dirty in this film.
Yeah, he is. But he does it well. He plays up to it. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's just the worst sort of paper cut out 2D. I'm a bad guy. Man, look here. See?
That's why I loved him. Oh, it's incredible.
Camp, but in the wrong way.
The best way.
Like, this has fundamentally affected one of my favorite films. Okay. Negatively. But I also recognize that for some people, subjectively, for me, it's awful, but objectively, it's not that bad. It's just a cheap popcorn sequel. So we're going to go 3.
Okay. That's more than I thought it was going to be.
I'm trying to be balanced. I'm trying to be you know.
That's fine. I'm going complete middle of the road. I thought it was going to be awful. I had some fun with it. 5. It's aggressively middle of the road. It's paper thin and then gets a bit interesting. There's some fun stuff in there. Yeah, 5.
Right.
Nothing more, nothing less. Aggressively middle of the road.
I will echo your thoughts. If you enjoyed this film, you are right.
1,000%.
I am jealous of you and I don't have a single bad word to say about your love for this film.
Same.
Anyone loving a thing is always a good thing.
Oh, definitely.
It's just not for me. I really, really didn't like it.
Same. Unfortunately, buddy, that is all the time we have for this week.
It is.
I know. I'm gonna go celebrate my birthday.
Yeah. Because you're 36 finally. You're finally a real boy. You're finally grown up.
I'm getting there, man. You know what I mean?
You're getting there with your bit of your lung missing.
Yeah. My one lung and my one weird knee and the involuntary noises I make when I stand up. I've done this entire episode sitting in a dressing gown, mate. You know what I mean? I'm 36 on a Friday night and I'm in my dressing gown at 7 p.m.
I can't believe that earlier you were like, oh, my lung collapsed and it really changed how I viewed life. Because I was like, if this is Ben's first concept of mortality, I'm going to flip the table. And guess what you led with?
It really is.
I wasn't aware that I was a human being that was capable of death.
No. I legitimately, up until yesterday, hashtag blessed, hashtag built different. You know what I mean? I could crack an egg with my bicep and sniff a creatine. You know what I mean? It's fine.
Right. Yeah, except if you have a slightly too strong fizzy green drink at the gym, then you have an existential crisis that means, again, you can't do your bit of the work because you can feel your teeth.
I did it very quick, but also the ants in my skin helped me type. That's all it was.
Right. Okay. Sure. Well.
Yeah. Thanks, man. keep saying this, and I'm starting to take offense to it. Like, you know, I genuinely it's nearly died, and I've put in so much work for this shit. And you're like, yeah, fuck all though.
Happy birthday!
Thanks, man.
I'm seeing you. I'm seeing you soon. I'm seeing you soon. I'm coming up. We're gonna do a quiz.
We need to do a promo for this. Every movie ever are doing a live movie quiz. We're going to be in person. It's going to be a film quiz at the Boardroom Gaming Cafe in Telford on the 7th of December. It's technically our first ever live show. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. It's going
to
be
anyone on
I'm
our Discord
buzzing.
That wants to come, come along. Come along. We'll, I mean, fuck it. It's like £2 a person. It's amazing. Yeah. There's cheesecake. I can't wait, mate. I can't wait.
Mate, I'm desperately looking forward to it. But we are definitely out of time now.
We are. Let's do the thing where you yell and I'll do my sums ups.
Oh, we got okay. So I normally kick off you. You normally go. It's been a pleasure and a privilege to hang out.
Oh,
we
yeah,
love each and every one of you. And then I go.
But that all still stands, though. You know,
but you've not said it yet.
We do love each and every one of you, and we do thank you for hanging out with us endlessly. Your attention, your gratification, your validation of our existences is the one thing that's keeping my half lung a bit inflated. You know what
it
I mean?
It really is, because I'm just rinsing in for it, the little snowflake boy. In the meantime, while Ben gives you all the love and adoration, I'm going to thank you. No, that's not right. Ben is now going to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday. Yeah. By wrapping up the thoughts, deep subtext, and subtle emotions of Gladiator 2 into a little Monday motivation pep talk, while I just tell you to do what society always tells you to do, and just tell you to consume.
Listen, if you are lucky enough to have two fully functioning lungs, I need you to find the nearest staircase, sprint up them like Mescal with a pocket full of crayons and a mama that's just dropped a fresh colouring pad on the kitchen table. You run up them like a Lego figurine, hot on the trails of a tasty chicken dinner. You know what I mean? That's what we need to do. I think the lesson that we can all take from Gladiator 2 is that lungs are more important than we thought previously. I think that's the one thing that I took away from it.